Homicide in Alaska's largest city has been down in the last decade, but 2016 has produced a spike in the number of murders, and Anchorage residents are anxious to know why. Some of the killings have been linked to risky behavior involving drugs or alcohol, and a few were the result of domestic violence. But other killings are not so easy to categorize. APD issued a statement last week urging residents to be extra vigilant and not travel alone late at night. Why? We'll find out today on Talk of Alaska.
The Alaska Morning News is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Beginning this fall, there will be three ways to share your thoughts or concerns with the University of Alaska Board of Regents. You can participate in a call-in session on Tuesday, September 6th from 4 to 6 p.m., attend an informal evening gathering in Juneau on Thursday, September 15th from 5:30 to 7 p.m., or provide written testimony prior to either event. Go to alaska.edu/bor/public-testimony. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. When the police department issues a statement warning residents to stay away from isolated areas of the city, such as bike trails and certain streets, advising people to travel in groups if they are out late at night, it causes concern. The full text of that advisory is on our website. Does this extend indefinitely, or only until a killer is caught? What parts of the city are more dangerous at night than others, and why? Here to help us understand the context of this notice and the recent spate of homicides are Anchorage's top law enforcement officials, Anchorage Police Department Chief Chris Tully.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being here, Chief. And APD's top detective and head of the Homicide Division, Sergeant Slav Markowitz. Hello, Sergeant.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. Also with us is Anchorage's top political official, Mayor Ethan Berkowitz.
Good morning, Lori.
Good morning. Thank you, gentlemen, for all being here. You out there listening in Alaska can join our conversation, too. Are you more afraid in the city, or do you feel late at night violence doesn't affect you? Have you reported activity that you considered suspicious? What do you think the response needs to be? Call us. The numbers statewide are 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Remember that the officials that are on today can't answer specific questions about open investigations. Let's first get an update from you all about what the city is doing to address violent crime. Last week, APD sent out a notice advising caution. Why did this go out to the public without more information, such as how long should people stay away from isolated streets when they're alone? Chief Tully and Sergeant Markowitz, let's start with you. What do people need to know about this advisory that went out?
You know, Lori, this is no different than going to the airport and hear an announcement come out over the public announcement system saying be mindful of your surroundings. If you see a suspicious piece of luggage or a suspicious bag that's unattended, to report it to authorities, no matter how minor you think it is. It's just being smart in today's time. We issued an alert to our public to be extra attentive to their safety due to the high number of homicides we've had this year. In the circumstances of some of these homicides occurring outside during early morning hours in isolated areas, parks, trails, and non-busy residential areas. Just like in March, when we noticed a high volume of vehicle thefts and thefts from vehicles, we issued an alert to our public to make them aware of the situation and also ask them to be more vigilant when it comes to locking their doors and removing their valuable items. We want our public to be proactive in their personal safety, and is not unusual for the police department to remind our citizens about just that.
So when you say report suspicious activity or people, what's meant by that? What kind of people and what kind of activity would you say you would want people to call in? Because certainly you don't want to get inundated with calls that are not productive.
We don't mind that. You know, neighbors know what's best in their neighborhood. Business owners know what's right and what's wrong in their businesses. And it's through that proactive help from the community and working along with the community, then the police can piece things together. You hear a loud bang in the middle of the night. Is it fireworks? Is it a gun going off? Is it somebody next door? what's the circumstances? The more information we get from the public when those things happen, instead of just talking about them the day after, the more opportunities we have to get out there and try to put the pieces together.
I'll give you an example. I often, late at night in my neighborhood, I live what I like to call the Lower East Side of Airport Heights. I'm down in Grandview Gardens area. And often, late at night, I hear what sounds like it could be gunshots, but I'm not sure. So I haven't called unless I was very, very sure that it sounded specifically like guns.
Well, it's okay to be overly cautious and call that in, because we do track that, and we'll send officers out to the area and try to verify it. Also, by all those who have heard this and report it, it helps us to then locate the area too. And quite candidly, we track all that information, and that's how we decide where we're going to put resources and things like that. It's very, very helpful to us to get a real handle on what's going on in the neighborhood.
Mayor Berkowitz, let's get you in here now. What is and can your administration do to help address the fears of citizens? Some of our residents here may have to be out late at night and walking because of work schedules and a lack of buses. What's your response?
People should know that we're aggressively trying to build our capacity to deal with violent crime. People should know that this is not only a law enforcement problem, and that if you do an analysis of what's going on, most violence is concentrated among a small number of people, places, and behaviors. The police department has specific strategy for people and places and behavior, but it's not just police responses. It's whether we have enough detox units in place, whether the police have good working relationships with the community, because we want to develop what's known as community policing, where the police and the community are working together to make this a safer place. And so the things that we've been doing are trying to build capacity at the police department, build legitimacy between the police department and various parts of the Anchorage community, and focusing on targeted areas.
Well, you raised the concept of community policing. That was a question that I did want to ask about. Explain a little bit about what that is. I know that there have been efforts in other cities that have seen big spikes in violent crime to do more of this community policing, where people, officers live or work in a specific area so that they get to develop better relationships. Is that sort of the idea behind this?
So we know most times when the public sees a police officer, it's often at their worst moment, and it's under some circumstances that they need police intervention or help from the police. We also know that if in advance of those incidents, we can get out and get to know one another, then those hard times will be much easier to deal with. So it's all about building that trust within the community understanding and trusting the police trusting those in the community that want to be responsible and make their neighborhood safe. Anytime we can preload that, it goes a long ways.
It's similar, I would imagine, to the resource officers in the schools. Is that correct?
Very similar. And there's just no doubt about it. The more the community's involved and you stop crime before it's happening by getting somebody the information they need or the help for a mental health issue or domestic problem, that you'll actually prevent crime and actually reduce calls. And
This is one of the situations we noticed actually as I was attempting to become mayor, is that the capacity of the police department had been degraded to a point where they were reactive, where they were responding to calls. They didn't have enough capacity to go out and do the proactive community policing and have the specialty units that they've had in the past. And that's one of the things we've been very forceful about trying to do, is building the police department. Right now, we have about 388 officers, many of whom are still in various phases of training, and so they're not fully deployed yet. But we had at our low point as few as 320 officers. And when you break that down among shifts and all that, that's just not enough for a city of our size and population.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are talking about concern over safety in Anchorage, the homicide spike that we've seen this year. My guests today are the Chief of Police, APD's Chief of Police Chris Tully is in the studio. APD's Homicide Detectives Chief Sergeant Slav Markowitz is also with us today, and Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255 across the state. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Sergeant Markowitz, I wanted to get you in here in the conversation. Let's kind of break down the year. There's been 25 homicides to date. How many arrests have been made, or what's the status of what you're doing right now? What can you tell us?
So at this point, we actually had 26 homicides, not including the officer involved shooting. Out of these, we still have 9 cases unsolved from the summer, and a couple of cases. Altogether, it's 9 cases that we still have not solved. So my unit is working on of course, on all these cases. While I can't offer specifics, in a lot of these cases, there is movement, there are leads, there are suspects, and things are happening. In a number of them, I think we expect to close those cases, and some of them sooner than later. Other cases, we still may not have leads. We don't have answers.
Mm-hmm. So, Lori, this is an unusual. You know, we know every 8 to 10 years we see these cycles, and it usually is a number of factors that contribute to the cycles and so on, such as the staffing, such as the, you know, environment in the community and our nation and around the world and so on. So there's a lot that goes into it. The hardest part is the current year, because you really don't have all that historical information for what's going on this year, because you haven't put all the pieces together and so on. But one thing we do know by looking back into the past, this isn't something that's never happened before. Unfortunately, it does happen from time to time.
Right. I did want to get to that point, some of the historical context that in the 90s, Anchorage reflected the nation in that there was a big spike in violent crime, and then it tapered off, and now we see a spike again. How many of the homicides that you've seen point to, as much as you can discuss, point to certain types of activity, drug buys that went bad or domestic violence?
So we do know that historically about 20% of the homicides are related in some way to domestic violence. Unfortunately, very sadly, it's up this year. It's greater than 20%. That's a real concern. Is this somebody that, you know, we could have gotten to? Is this some family member that just didn't intervene enough and get the help for their loved one, be it in their same household or the neighbor next door or down the street? This is really concerning. And another thing that's really sad and puzzling is our youth. You know, in the past, they didn't contribute for as many of these incidents and so on. And unfortunately, that number's on the rise also. And why is that? Are we not being good enough parents? Are we not serving them well enough in our educational system, in our churches and synagogues and so on, or after-school activities, our sports activities? You know, are we missing something with these children? This is a real concern, not just to the police department, because ultimately it's ended up in crimes, but this is a concern for the whole community, and this is something that the whole community really needs to have dialogue about and try to come together over.
Does Anchorage have what some cities see, which is sort of like neighborhood or area clashes between young people that maybe are affiliated with gangs in the city of their own creation or gangs outside of the state?
Yeah, unfortunately, gangs does have an effect on just about any city in the nation. Where we are fortunate in Anchorage, we don't have the full-blown gang activity that you see in some of the other particularly larger cities. But that doesn't mean that our residents don't travel to those other cities. That doesn't mean that some of those individuals come up to visit our city and some of that spills over into our neighborhoods and onto our streets. We have seen some activity where there are gang links, for lack of better words, that people have some type of association to gang, but not the same sort of territorial and full-blown gang activity that these other cities experience, where a gang owns a neighborhood or owns a street and things like that. Mm-hmm. Most of it's just through affiliation.
And I can add
Sergeant
to this.
Markowitz.
Yes, I can add to this that what I've seen in most of the homicides, both this year and in the past, is that the homicides are usually results of interpersonal conflicts, relationship conflicts, mental health issues, and sometimes they come together. And what Chief told about gangs, I can add to this that we don't see like gang-on-gang violence. It's just people that, you know, we may hear about some affiliation with the gang, but it's sometimes people of the same group that have a conflict with each other don't agree and resort to violence. And one more thing that I would like to add about gangs is that it's not that easy to define. When we talk to suspects, their families, witnesses, they are not going to tell you, well, my son is a gang member, and they will provide you all the information and background. You have to investigate that, and then you have to be conservative. You don't jump to conclusions. You don't want to label someone just because he has certain types of clothes or maybe associates with some group. You have to do some more homework, so to speak. And the same applies to court. You don't just go to court and label someone a gang member. You have to have some backing information, some solid evidence, some historical evidence.
Mm-hmm. Sergeant Markowitz, you have been in law enforcement in Anchorage. Your tenure is longer than anyone else here in the room, especially as working with the city. When did you first start with APD? And give us a little context in what you've seen in that time.
I started with APD as a reserve officer first in 1988. Then I was hired full-time in 1989. So I've been with APD for close to 27 years. Mm-hmm. And my academy was actually the first one like in 4 years. There was a hiring freeze that lasted for many years. And I remember when I graduated from the academy and started working first midshift, then swing shift. I remember how short we are, how short-handed. So those hiring policies reflected on what was happening, what we are facing on the street, because it took a good part of the decade to rebuild the department to the level required. And I also saw that, I know that the mayor mentioned that in 1990s we saw a spike in homicides nationwide, but we saw the same in Anchorage, but I think a part of that was that we just didn't have the resources to deal with the problems that we're facing, and eventually that did catch up with us. And we saw a big spike in the early 90s, which saw its peak in 1995, where we had 29 homicides.
Hmm. What was the main takeaway from that year? What was that spike attributed to? I mean, I'm sure there's, of course, more than one reason, but what would you tell us about what happened in that year?
At that time, it was nationwide cocaine and crack epidemic, and young people involved in some type of gang activity.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Berkowitz, you also have a long tenure with political leadership in the state. You were in the legislature for more than a decade, one of the leaders there. Talk a little bit about what you've seen in that trajectory that you've had in your career in politics as an Anchorage legislative leader and now mayor.
I think the point that's most relevant for the situation we're in now is, as the state grapples with its fiscal situation, it's retreated from some of the responsibilities it's had in the past. For example, we have fewer detox beds. The troopers are closing down a lot of their operations in the Anchorage area. That has consequences for us. We're seeing problems with the Department of Corrections. Right now, there are a significant number of walkaways from some of their facilities, which put added burdens on APD and detract from their ability to pursue other kinds of policing. So the trajectory of what I've seen is that you cannot have a focus on law enforcement in fits and starts, and you cannot view law enforcement as the sole solution to issues related to public safety. Law enforcement is part of the answer, but it works together with making sure the community is involved, with making sure we have adequate support for drug and alcohol rehabilitation, making sure that there's good public information available so we can reduce the amount of domestic violence and sexual assault, because these are long-term issues that require long-term sustained efforts. And as the state retreats from that, it impedes our ability to have some long-term successes.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number statewide is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. If you have specific concerns you'd like to raise with our legal, and the mayor is in the studio with us, and also the chief of police and the head of homicide. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. When you mention domestic violence, Anchorage has the dubious distinction of being at or near the top in the nation for domestic violence, sexual assault, has for a very long time. Why can't we change that?
So I'll start with something positive that we've heard. It's a small positive, but it's something for us to be optimistic about. There was a victimization study that was just released at the University of Alaska, and they indicated that the rates of domestic violence had declined. They're still possibly high, but there had been a significant decline recently. And I've spoken with people who are experts in the field, and the analysis that makes the most sense to me is that domestic violence is something that is generational. If people are raised in a violent household, it tends to be passed on. We did not, as a state, do a good job addressing domestic violence a generation ago. And so we have to continue with our efforts to make sure that people condemn domestic violence, resist domestic violence. But this is an intergenerational problem that will take many years to sort out. We need to be more aggressive with how we address it. And some of it has to do, for example, there was a terrific program a couple years ago where the police department would follow up on domestic violence writs. And the house, so they would basically knock on the doors of people who had a DV writ. And this saw a significant decline in the repeat offenses in those households. We lack the capacity to do that. And if we get to a sufficient capacity, sufficient size police force, we can bring back those sort of efforts, and that will have an impact.
Where are those efforts currently, Chief Tully?
Well, just don't have enough personnel, resources, and so on. The good thing here in the community is that the community is very comfortable approaching the police department and reporting that. You don't always have that in a lot of other communities. So that's a contributing factor also, because we do take all the information, take all these matters seriously, that it's pretty accurate of what's happening out there.
Mm-hmm. So the idea of Mayor Berkowitz, I think you said there's currently about 387 officers. Is that
that's
right,
correct.
Chief Tully? And what's the spot where you'd like to be?
Well, we had a perf study and then a restudy, an update of it this past year, and they recommend at a very minimum we should be around that 430 mark.
Okay. So how hard is it to get people recruited in?
It takes a while. Right now, out of that 387, there's 50 of them are still in some phase of training, be it field training or in the academy. Now, field trainings, when they're out on the street after finishing the academy, and they're responding to calls with a senior officer that's mentoring them and evaluating them and helping to continue to teach them and make sure that competency, the ability's there, as well as the confidence is there, and so on, to turn them loose. And then they become what we call a solo officer, where they will individually respond to calls and be in full duty capacity. So the whole process takes well over a year, mm-hmm. from the time when you make application to actually get into an academy, complete an academy, and then complete field training. So from not hiring for a long time, and even though we did academies last year that continued over into this year, we haven't realized the full benefit of those recruiting efforts yet.
I'd also point out that, you know, we're 20 years past a year where they had three academies run. And so you've got people who are eligible for retirement now. We've been very fortunate we have the rate of attrition amongst officers. I think that speaks well to the morale at the department right now, that officers are sticking around longer because it's a good place to work. We've also seen increases in the number of applicants for the academies, and we're running larger academies as people realize that APD is a good place to work and it's a good department in a good city. So, but it's going to take a while, because for the year that it takes to put someone on the street, you've also got officers who are retiring or leaving for other reasons. Mm-hmm. And we have to backfill those slots.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the phones. We have a caller from outside of Anchorage. Roger is in White Mountain. Hi, Roger.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. With the state of Alaska planning to empty out their prison systems at the rate of 25% of convicted criminals, will crimes become more common, and should we be concerned? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Thanks, Roger. I'm not sure where he's getting those numbers, but who would like to take that question?
I don't know where the numbers are yet either, but the legislature and governor just passed Senate Bill 91, which is a criminal justice reform act, and they're changing the approach to the criminal justice process, and there's concern that it's going to empty people on the streets. And the hope is that if there's adequate rehabilitation available for individuals, you're not going to see a spike in crime. The concern is that the state has not made the requisite investments in deterrence and in rehabilitation, which are some of the critical pieces of the criminal justice system. And so we've adopted a little bit of a wait and see approach towards what SB 91 is going to have. But the state has a responsibility here. The legislators that helped pass that initiative have the responsibility to fund it. And the governor has a responsibility to look out for the public safety of all Alaskans and not just say this is an Anchorage responsibility because we have a robust police department.
Mm-hmm. Chief Tully.
But it definitely has consequences on the community and so on, and some of these possibly unforeseen consequences. For example, the police department are very compassionate about the community, and we want people to be successful in their lives and so on, and we want to give them every opportunity. It's hard for the community to struggle with what's the proper balance. For example, we had a woman who escaped from a halfway house this weekend, who was in on various charges, one of them being stolen auto. Now, we know that a lot of times when somebody steals an auto, they've stolen many autos, and there could be a lot more to that. You want to give the person a benefit of the doubt, not put them in a hard bed and subject them to even further influences from the criminal crowd and so on. But at what time does it become a burden to the community and a danger to the community? That's a really hard one to guess. So you're giving her the benefit of the doubt by putting her in a better environment and so on, only to have the individual escape over the weekend, becoming a police matter. This is not something the state's dealing with. This is something the police department locally has to. And then ultimately the community has to struggle with it because the community becomes a victim.
Mm-hmm. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about crime in Anchorage and take your calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbaalaska.com. It's summer and time to get out on the water. Whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner, having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing homicide in Anchorage today, the high rate that we've seen in 2016. And our guests in the studio are Chief of Police of Anchorage Police, Chris Tully, also the head of Anchorage Police Department's Homicide Unit, Sergeant Slav Markowitz, and Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz are all in the studio with us today. We do have some email questions coming in. One person writes in and says that she lives in an Eastside Neighborhood Condominium Association, and they have individuals who repeatedly gain access to a vacant unit. And she says they are IV drug users. They see the mess that they leave behind. They're actively selling. She said, "We've been very good reporters, so good that APD came to my door a week ago and asked us to quit calling because they can't do anything about this group of people. Needless to say, this is frustrating because we know our community is not safe with these questionable individuals. What more can we do to facilitate the health and safety of our community?" Chris Tully.
Without having all the information about the various calls and reporting of it, I'd find it very hard to believe that the officers would give a citizen that type of advice. We take each one of these matters very seriously. And we want you to call. We want you to report it. But doing something about it isn't always a simple thing. You know, for example, these individuals might have some right to be in there. Maybe their aunt said, "Sure, use the place. I'm not using it anymore." The uncle, whatever, parent. It really takes a lot to get to the bottom of all that. And some of it becomes a civil matter and requiring somebody to take action saying, you know, that they don't want them in their place. Also, you know, it gets back to that same old thing. Is it criminal? Is it a health issue? Is it an educational problem? We need help from the entire community to solve each and one of these problems.
So in a case such as this one, where this person who emailed was frustrated, what else, what other advice can you give them as to what they should do as far as documentation or, I mean, always within the context of keeping yourself safe. So what should people do to help APD?
So we take these matters very, very seriously, and to an extent where I totally revamped the police department's way of handling allegations and so on. In addition to that, took a proactive. In the past, we had a unit which was called our internal affairs, that if somebody said something like this, the police give them bad advice, we would take a look at it either through a management review or having an actual investigator investigate allegations of something improperly being handled. Well, that unit now is a division with a captain that oversees it. And in that division, they have we have a couple of units, and one is now the Office of Professional Responsibility, because that's what it's really all about. Are the officers being professional? And we, as the leadership of the department, and for that matter, the officers within the department and other employees, won't tolerate that kind of actions from anyone within the employment of the Anchorage Police Department. We always treat people with respect, dignity, and we want to be professional. So if there's something like that that has happened, we want to know about it, and we will deal with it. With that also being said, that we created an Office of Internal Inspections. So for the first time, we are taking a proactive look at each and every unit within the police department. We have a team of individuals that go around from unit to unit to unit to look at things, the latest versions of policy. Does policy need to be updated or deleted? Do we need new policy? Or are we doing best practices? And it's that proactive thing, trying to catch things before they happen, sort of policing ourselves. They're making us a lot more efficient, a lot more accountable.
The idea of avoiding isolated areas late at night if you're alone. Mayor, this is a question for you. I've had a few people say, you know, some of the lighting on the trail system isn't that great, or it's out frequently. Are efforts being kind of stepped up to address those kinds of things to make sure that there's appropriate lighting in
areas? We are definitely going to improve the lighting on the trails. That is something that we had in the works in any event, and it's something we're going to improve. But I'd also like to sort of dovetail with what the chief just said, is we're also launching a series of community meetings this Thursday. The chief and I are going to meet with the Valley of the Moon community in Valley of the Moon Park, and we'll have a series of these meetings scattered around Anchorage over the next several months.
And what's the effort there? What are you hoping to do?
We're hoping to get feedback from the community and reassure them that we're making every effort, that we're doing what we can to ensure that public safety is a top priority, which it is. It's something I think about on a regular basis, and I know the chief and the rest of the department does too, because if you're not a safe community, we can't go do the other things that we like to do. And there's a lot of positive things going on in Anchorage right now. And I think if we can build upon the positive, we can get past some of the concerns that the community has right now.
In the course of your investigations and the spike that we've seen this year, at some point the FBI became involved. What's the parameters there for when the FBI gets involved in investigations? And why, we had an email question from someone who says the FBI's in town, it must mean there's a serial killer. Well, we know that the FBI has a presence here all the time. They have an enormous building downtown, and so it's not that they've just dropped in. They're here, but now they're involved in this ongoing series of investigations.
So we work with the FBI throughout the year, and not just the FBI, with other partners in law enforcement, be it the troopers, the officers out in Wasilla and Palmer and elsewhere around the state, as well as our federal partners. We have task force members that sit over at these various offices, and we look at it as a force multiplier. It's not so much of a multiplying their force, but multiplying our force. But it, in reality, also multiplies their force. Mm-hmm. And it's relying on help from one another, because none of us have enough resources to tackle these problems by ourselves. We don't have unlimited budgets. I can't hire as many officers that I just choose to do and so on. And so we have to look everywhere we can to get help, not only from the community, but from our law enforcement partners.
Sergeant Markowitz, did you want to weigh in there?
Yes, ever since I've been in the homicide unit, we've always had some kind of involvement with the FBI, not just in the homicide cases. They always assisting us in other cases. Like the chief said, we have task force officers that actually reside in the FBI office, and they are very good liaison between APD and FBI. And when we have some cases that require some assistance, they are willing to help, and they're always there to help us. And it's not just the FBI. We also work closely with the DA. We work with the marshals. We work with the ATF. And depending on what type of cases you work, sometimes you have one agency more involved than the other. The last few years, we had a lot of cases where it was actually the ATF agents that were involved, helping us track some weapons evidence. And so that's nothing new.
So, you know,
Chief Tully.
Crime is not just unique to our community and so on, and it doesn't stay within our neighborhood or in our city block. Unfortunately, it goes beyond the municipality, and for that, to a lesser extent, beyond the state of Alaska into the lower 48 and even internationally sometimes. So it's through these partnerships and so on that we are able to follow leads. FBI Safe Streets, for example, just a good way that when there's drugs being brought into our community, for example, then we can help, we can try to track those sources and stop the flow from coming in.
Let's go to the phones for a moment. Stu is in Anchorage. Hi, Stu.
Thanks for taking my call. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and everybody for trying to help the community as best you can. I heard you say stopping crimes before they happen, and, well, I called in a shot that turned out to be fatal about a month ago in my neighborhood, and I have all these questions when I hear about people getting shot and killed, especially with the news that's coming out from the Philippines lately about extrajudicial people taking things into their own hands. Is there any evidence that that could be what's happening here? I mean, I know in my own community, everybody knows about the homeless people in the park, and one of them was a registered pedophile, and he raped a child in front of the church. And, you know, we all know that case there here in Muldoon. And people, you know, the American Civil Liberties Union has made it so that these people are filling our parks. And I'm just trying to figure out, is that could be what's happening? Is there any evidence that, you know, we got a Charles Bronson-like Death Wish character running around Is there a certain group that's being targeted, or is it, are they killing dog walkers? You know, I'm just trying to figure it out. And I'm afraid the more publicity we hear from the Philippines, I mean, that guy there who's, I think he killed, he, you know, they had 2,000 people taken out within a week, and he's got 91% approval ratings. I'm concerned that we're just shifting into a lawless state here. And as people watch what's happening around the world, I'm, you know, I don't even call in the shots unless they're really close now. And
well, let's,
that's
let,
where
let's,
I'm at.
Okay,
so
let's give them a chance to answer soon.
There too, so.
Okay, thanks for the questions. We've got our law enforcement officials here to respond to that. Chief Tully?
Thanks, Stu, for that call. You know, we can't speculate. Speculating would be irresponsible. We only deal in the true facts, what we actually know and is verifiable. And quite often things initially, their appearance can change over time and so on. What I can say is that it's important to call in those tips. It's important to provide that piece of information, because the littlest piece of information could be the one thing that gets us to where we need to be. And these things take time. It really takes the help of the community. Going out there and trying to enforce the law yourself is probably not the best thing. You know, we have such, what makes Alaska and for the most part Anchorage such a great place is the diversity that we enjoy in our community. And our acceptance of people who have ways different than our own can often come at a price. Unfortunately, there's a few individuals out in our community that choose to live a life of crime. And how sad for them to take advantage of so many good people in our neighborhoods.
Stu was alluding to homeless populations, expressing some fear about that. And I think that's a common fear, but statistics show us that the majority of people that are homeless that are involved in crimes are usually the victims of crimes. Mayor, what can the city do? I know that there's been a big push to clean out camps and to get people into services. For a while, the services got a little overwhelmed. What's happening currently, and what can the city do to help people who are truly the most vulnerable? I mean, you're not even behind a locked door if you're sleeping outside. What can the city do to help them?
Well, and the city is moving on this full speed ahead. We just recently completed a survey of people who are on the streets and in the camps trying to get a better handle on their names. We meet regularly with the service providers, with the folks who have housing, so we can connect individuals with housing, because people who are vulnerable, and you will see it, there are a lot of vulnerable people on the street because of medical issues, mental health, or drug or alcohol issues. And so we are moving people like that into housing as rapidly as we can and getting them connected with services as rapidly as we can. We've had some success at it. We've built the foundation to be more successful moving ahead. Some of what we're doing is also taking a load off of the police department. The number of responses to the community service patrol have declined by about 25% because of some of the housing first initiatives, where we've taken some of the high demand consumers of emergency services off the street and put them into housing. So there's benefits in that front. But this is all part of a comprehensive approach to making sure that Anchorage is a safer place to be.
Mm-hmm. Chief Tully, you talked a little bit about this, about people not taking the law into their own hands. Here's an email question about the contribution of guns, assault weapons, concealed carry. Do these aggravate, the question is, police problems? And if so, what can be done? This is from John and Homer.
Well, you know, I'm probably not the best one to ask that question. Police don't make up the rules, and they don't decide how the city's going to be run and so on. We basically carry out orders of the legislators and our lawmakers. And so that's more of a philosophical question that, you know, better probably be suited for the mayor.
Mayor, is there anything you'd like to add to that? Or
So you look at the evidence, and you need to have evidence-based policy decisions. This is always one of the problems. And I know a lot of times in the debate about the Second Amendment and gun rights, there's a lot of lofty rhetoric and fear-based arguments that somehow seem more inclined to land rhetorical punches than to actually provide facts. And the facts are that you look at the homicides that we've had in Anchorage this year. Anyone who used a gun to commit a homicide used a gun illegally. Anyone who didn't use a gun, that's not implicated in this particular debate.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to another email question. This is from Brian in Anchorage. He says, Anchorage police have said they can't release certain information about homicides because it might jeopardize the integrity of an investigation. How does releasing the method of death from homicide 6+ months ago, for example, affect the investigation? As a citizen, he says he wants to know, have more information. He says he feels that the police have an obligation to release more. We don't need to know everything, but in order for people to make better decisions about their personal safety, are there indications that the three double homicides on or near the trails are related?
So like I said, we're not going to speculate on the current crimes and so on. But in general, a lot of times you don't know pieces of information, and then it's speculating until you have those hard given facts where you know for sure and with uncertainty. Then there's no good to passing it out. It's not fair to the victims' families mm-hmm. and the loved ones that are left behind and grieving and dealing with this and having to relive these things over and over and over. Just to satisfy someone's own curiosity gets us nowhere.
Sergeant Markowitz.
Maybe I will address the first part of the question, why we wouldn't release some details of a homicide that happened 6 months ago. In homicide cases, in a lot of them, there's sometimes only one person that knows all the details, and that's the suspect. If we put that information out, it makes it more difficult for us to eliminate the suspect, to gather leads. For example, just from my own experience in the homicide unit, we had cases where someone was calling from jail about a specific homicide, and that person claimed he had firsthand information, but we didn't release the way the person was killed. And that information that we are getting from that inmate didn't match what happened. But someone was trying to find the ticket out of jail through providing information. And sometimes when we release information and some details, some people may feel tempted to blame somebody, and they will provide information that was already released. And that would certainly correspond with the information that we have, but that would also be the same information that was released. So basically that's the basics of investigating homicides. And it's not just the Anchorage Police Department. It's you see that everywhere nationwide. You see federal agencies operating that way. And when there is information that we think will help us in catching the suspect, that information will be quickly released if we think that this would help.
Sure. Thank you, Sergeant Markowitz. Chief Tully, is it a coincidence that you worked for the DEA before you became the chief of police, or is there something else going on there that this was what was needed at this time? Are we seeing a kind of a surge in drug activity, and that's part of why you became chief?
Great question. I was actually a police officer first. I served as a police officer for a number of years before I moved into the federal government, and I had a great career traveling across the nation and elsewhere around the world and working with various departments and various communities, and learned a lot from it. It was by coincidence that my last 4 or so years with the federal government was stationed here in Alaska, where I got to know how all about not just Anchorage, but the entire state, working with various departments across the state. And that's what led me to be in the right place at the right time, and the need of the city and the mayor and assembly, who's so supportive of public safety. It was a real good fit, match.
Okay, so it wasn't anything that the need dictated that we needed somebody from DEA in that position at this time?
I just think it correct. There wasn't any direct because of drugs being related to crime, things like that. We see this across the nation and around the world.
All right. We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about crime in Anchorage and take your calls on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. The 2016 Alaska State Fair will be completely smoke-free, protecting all fairgoers from exposure to tobacco smoke and the aerosol from electronic smoking devices. If you use tobacco or e-cigarettes, now is a great time to connect with Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line for free support, to set a quit date, and then breathe easy at the Alaska State Fair. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Support for Alaska Public Media's Energy News Desk comes from Bettesworth North, Architects and Planners, and the Atwood Foundation.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Let's go to the phones now. Joe is in Anchorage. Hi, Joe. Joe is gone. All right. Well, let's go to Ida in Barrow. Ida, do you have a question for our guest? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and the crew there.
Good morning.
With Anchorage being considered as the largest village within the whole state of Alaska, I have some issues that I want to share. My relative was involved in a pedestrian accident in Anchorage almost a year ago. And the police department probably picked him up because that's where we found his glasses and watch. And then from there, he was put into detox. And I did my own investigation with my daughter. And then when I inquired as to what happened, detox, they told me there was no protocol as to what time he entered and what time he was released. But yet, when we delved more into it, he was released within an hour. And then when we first went there, they said, was he homeless? And here I'm from a village. I'm from Barrow. And then that's what I was so disgusted about. The detox is more like a swinging door for homeless. And yet there was no protocol as to when the individual needed to be released. After all, isn't there a 24-hour law that we have up here when a person is detoxed?
Okay, Ida, thank you. I can tell how upset you are, and this is a very emotional issue, and it leads into the larger question about detox facilities and the need. We had an email question that sort of matches up with this, mayor asking, with the lack of state resources, what can the city do to help backfill some of what's needed for treatment?
So currently the city is looking for additional partners to help grow the facility out at Clitheroe and expand it. We are taking a small legislative grant that was offered a couple of years ago, and I was just out touring the site a few days back, and that is a big piece of what we're doing. There's some current talk about turning the closed Palmer Correctional Facility into a detox facility, but what has to happen is that the agencies that are engaged in detox and drug and alcohol rehabilitation have to come together. We need to pool our resources. One of the frustrations I've had as mayor is that we can convene people who provide services from the nonprofit or from various levels of government, but the agencies have to take down the silos that lock them into their own way of doing things, focus on the mission that they all share, which is to provide these services. And if we do that, I believe we can leverage the resources we have and have a more impactful result. But right now, there's an awful lot of effort that's spent because of the way funding works. And so these agencies are pursuing funds rather than providing all the services that can be provided. And that has to change with how those funds are allocated.
Chief Tully, did you want to add something there?
No, I just, you know, my heart goes out to anybody in those type of situations, right, and the family and so on. It's just very sad. And that's something that we have to realize is that the police department, even though these aren't per se criminal matters and so on, at least I didn't hear anything truly criminal there, the police gets involved, you know, and mm-hmm. quite often the police are the ones out there on that front line trying to find help for individuals, trying to find help for families, getting them to a place where they need to be so the healthcare providers or others can get them back on their feet.
Well, we only have about a minute left. Let's talk about the moves toward the future. There's been a discussion of perhaps more officers on the trails, patrolling by bicycles. What can you tell us about this increased effort to try to step up trail patrols?
So fortunately, over the summer months, our school resource officers, not all of them are working summer school and things like that, and we get this little added benefit of having a few officers available that traditionally we've put them on bikes. Wouldn't it be great if we could get some kind of staffing level that we'd be able to put some officers out on the trails all year long and so on? And if not on bikes, on patrol and so on. Bottom line is just finding those resources and making them available. Because again, Sunday, I got an email from someone I hadn't never met before, anything like that. And I think the individual emailed me and the assembly members and so on. And she said that she was fairly new to the community and was fearful to walk the trail and have her husband do the trail and even take her dogs for a walk. So Monday morning, I had my assistant call her up and say, let's go for a walk. And we walked along the trail with her dogs and we had the conversation. And, you know, that dialogue went so far. And
that's what it takes.
That's what it takes.
Everybody getting involved.
Out in the community.
I wanted to let our folks know who sent in emails that I will pass those on to the officials that we had today. So at least you'll know that they went to the right people. Thanks to Chief Tully, Sergeant Markowitz, and Mayor Ethan Berkowitz for being in the studio today with us for Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program. Beginning this fall, there will be three ways to share your thoughts or concerns with the University of Alaska Board of Regents. You can participate in a call-in session on Tuesday, September 6th from 4 to 6 p.m., attend an informal evening gathering in Juneau on Thursday, September 15th from 5:30 to 7 p.m., or provide written testimony prior to either event. Go to alaska.edu/bor/public-testimony. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.